Tonight, we begin our learning about Boaz. So remember, let's try to think about this thematically, grouping the ideas together. We've spent a bit of time learning a little bit about Naomi, a little bit about Ruth, and now in Perek Beis, let's spend a little bit of time thinking about Boaz. And the way we should try to arrange it is, let's think about him internally, what the Pesukim are telling us, and then let's try to like zoom out a little bit and get a sense of perspective of who Boaz is in the greater sense of Tanakh. So what we really covered, just a quick recap last week, is that we suddenly have Ruth now begging, essentially. She's getting the grains off the floor as a pauper from fields, and she happens upon the field of Boaz, and we last left off where Boaz arrives at the field. And he greets his workers in an unusual way, which the Gemara tells us is saying shalom with the name of Hashem. And the last thing we talked about was how that Boaz was really Boaz was a shofet. He had a perspective of the whole era, and he realized that people were sort of devolving looked at the shoftim period, and he tried to rectify that period with his way of incorporating God into conversation. That was the last thing we really covered last week. Now let's understand the conversation that ensues. First of all, let's just put into perspective. When all the townsfolk of Beis Lechem congregated and accumulated to welcome in Naomi and ask all about her and go back to their business last week, was Boaz there?
Doesn't seem like that,
and if he was, he's probably at the very fringes of the crowd. You know, we don't see any specific interaction. So, you know, if Boaz lives in Beis Lechem, which it seems like he does, because that's where his fields are, he wasn't involved in the welcome party. So it's strange that suddenly, you know, one of the aristocracy of this place, you know, wasn't involved in the welcome. Suddenly now he's here and he's walking into his fields seeing what's going on. So here's what we're told.
Can it be that the welcome is just the
women? I don't know. I don't think we're going to see in a moment what they could have been coming out for. But I doubt that it was like they sent a special welcome committee. There was something which was bringing them all together, and that's something. Then they saw Naomi as she was walking into town, but I doubt it was just the women at this point.
It sounds like
everybody was there, and you know, saw her coming in, and and Boaz was conspicuously not present or not audible. So that's what we have now. And he walks into his field, and let's start in Pasuk Dalet, just to take it back one. Pasuk Vihinei, this is Perek Beis Pasuk Dalet. So we're starting on the very top of page 4. Vihinei. So he greets his reapers, God bless you, and they said, God bless you, and Hashem is with you, Hashem should bless you, wonderful, and they greet each other. Let's break the conversations up into pieces. So first he makes an inquiry. He looks around and he sees this young lady, and he says, Now, ostensibly, how many, you know, Is Ruth going to be the only person in this field? No. Most likely not, right? Most likely she's one of many who are trying to find their slim livelihood by catching the grains. Now, so what makes him suddenly interested in her? You can imagine that the biggest and the most important thing he's probably coming to check is, you know, has everything been done right? You know, have they reaped at the right time? Have they collected it correctly? What is his interest in the girl who's behind the tractor, right?
She's
what was that? Okay, so it might be that he actually knows all the people there, right? But you know that sort of very small town, you know, mentality where she would know everybody. It could be that she looks different in which way. She might be beautiful. But again, I would assume that there's probably a bunch of young ladies there as well, also collecting. But he's only inquiring about her.
She asked him also.
It's never saw all before. Men, and she's the one.
What was that?
All men. Because it says.
Oh, okay.
Goes to the Kotzrim.
No, we're going to see that the Naros there. No, there's no. The Kotzrim is four men. The Naros is four men. But it's clear from later on that there are ladies there as well. It's clear that there are women there as well. Yeah. Jesse.
Well, there seems to be some sort of back and forth as to her affiliation.
Right.
Whether it's her original affiliation of Moab or now as part of, you know, the Shevet here. So let me be referring to, like, who is she affiliated with?
That's interesting, yeah. So notice the question isn't who is she, but to whom? Which is very fascinating over here. So what's her affiliation? You know, but there's some bits, if you go back, you need to still say what triggered that curiosity as well. You know, it could be, as many of you are suggesting, is that the Mepharshim really debate this. Rashi says that the way she collected was unique. This is, I think, what we all grew up with when learning Rus, is that she collected in a particular tzanur way, that she would bend down, she would crouch rather than bend over. And she was doing it in an unusual way for a single girl. Ibn Ezra says that that in fact she looked different because foreign people dress foreign in a foreign manner. Ibn Ezra, very close to the pshat, is that what's likely is that she probably just wears clothes in a different style to the regular Israelite girls. So he's noticing her because of her looks, not because of her actions, but the way she looks. Addressing this, the Malim says, you know what, it could be that what's unusual about her is not necessarily her tznius, but the fact that she's doing a great job, meaning she's collecting a lot of grain. She's not spending the time at the coffee station speaking to everybody else, especially the young guys. So meaning to say that usually this field would be a scene, and she's not there for the scene, she's there for the grain. So Malbin's really noticing something unusual about her, and that's why Boaz starts with his questions.
Well, where's he getting
everybody right?
Sounds like he's making, what is that based on? Nothing in the chat, nothing.
Absolutely, every one of them is in the chat. Because Rashi, okay, so Rashi's is harder to attribute to the pshat, but it seems like we're going to see how there's going to be an echo of Rashi later on. When it comes to Ibn Ezra, she's a Moabite, so that's her difference. The Ibn Ezra's attributing it to her difference. The Malbim is very clear, is because later on she comes out with a huge amount of grain, and she doesn't spend time with the rest of the people. And he's going to about to describe that in a moment, that she does shift, that she doesn't spend so much time under in the shade. She's just collecting all day. So they are rooted. It's just everybody's trying to struggle with what makes her unique. You know, Boaz isn't inquiring about every young girl who happens to step into his field. If you dig it one step further, actually. Esther actually got me a book by Yael Ziegler on Megillas Rus, which was fabulous. Dina was just heard a share of hers online, and she talks to great lengths about Megillas Rus. She suggests over here that, you know, what's going on is that, remember, if we reverse back to the whole congregation that happened outside of town as Naomi and Rus are walking up. What's the question that everybody asks? Is Hazos Naomi? Is this Naomi? Right? Is this really the Naomi we knew? We loved. We didn't love. Is this the Naomi we knew? And what's clearly missing in that conversation is, and what about the woman who's standing next to her? Right? Nobody even discusses Rus whatsoever. So what Boaz is doing over here is putting in that piece of the puzzle into the conversation. He's saying, Lemi. This is the question that should have been asked then. Lemia narazos, to who? Where does she fit into the picture? To who is she associated with? Which is what Jesse was saying. What is her association? She's obviously not from here. So what is her association? What brings her here? It might even be, in fact, he might be asking, is she married? If you want to ask that, lemia narazos, because there might be even a piquing of his interest in terms of the larger picture of the Geula, which is happening over here. But for whatever reason it may be, on whatever level of Pshat, or perhaps even deeper, the Drash which is going on over here, something interests him in this young lady, and he asks the Na'ar. And the Na'ar responds in two verses. He says the following, Vayana Na'ar hanitzav al ha-kotzrim, vayomer Na'ar ha-na'aram of Yahi, ha-shavai Moab, Naomi, Mistei Moab. She is this Moabite woman, and remember, she can't seem to throw or shake her culture, right? He's still going to give it to her thick when he describes who she is. She's a Moabite. Vatomer alaktono asafti ba'morim acharei ha-kotzrim. And she says this is her mission. He is describing her mission, that she's going to collect all day after the kotzrim. Vatovo vatamod me'oza bokevat ata jzeh shiftom ha'bayis ma'at. This is what the Malbim was suggesting, is that she didn't spend too much time in the house. She wasn't schmoozing. She was just working all day. So you know, and the Mefarshim struggle with whether he is downplaying or he is praising her. You know, it could go either way over here. With what he's actually saying over here, meaning is he giving her the attribution of Moabite to sort of, you know, dismiss Boaz's interest, meaning because what about us? Meaning what about the Kotzrim? And therefore he's sort of dismissing her and don't worry about her, she's just, you know, just doing what she does. Or is he saying no? Is he actually emphasizing the Midrash Zut and the Malbim say that no, it's actually a very positive portrayal that to say, well, look what an unusual person. She's made a journey and she's very into her work. It goes either way, depending on what the agenda you put into the Nahar of what his real agenda is, which is hard to know. Nonetheless, Boaz immediately continues the conversation, not worth the Nahar. This is a very uncomfortable thing because, you know, let's just picture that we'll zoom out for a moment with the producer. You know, we're watching the whole scene. There's Rus and there's Boaz and the Nahar speaking. You know, she's probably aware of the fact that he and him are looking at her. So that conversation now, Boaz de-triangulates and immediately comes to her and he walks over. And now, with that introduction, he says the following. He says, "Vayomer Boaz el Rus, halo shomati viti, I heard my daughter, halo shomat viti, אל תלכי ללכות בשדה אחר, וגם לא תעבורי מזה, וחויסי בקום מן הרוסי. Stay here, don't go anywhere else. Stay collecting with my girls. ואינייך בשדה אשר יקצורון, והולכת אחריהן, הלא ציווי שעשה נערים לבלתי נוגח. Stay here, I'll make sure that none of the boys bother you. וצמיס, and if you should feel thirsty, והולכת אל הכלים, ושוסיס, and then, you know, there's the drink station over there with all that's already gathered water. The shasis me'asher yishavun l'hanarim. And what the strapping young men have already drawn out of the well, you can drink. So meaning, my facility is open to you. And what's interesting is he doesn't explain himself really, you know. He just sort of walks straight in. You know, like, what is she thinking at this moment when he says this? It's very unusual. Meaning, obviously he's been interested. And he's found out something about her, and he's telling her, I'm going to offer you everything you need, but there's no context. It's very strange. It's very abrupt what she's hearing over here. It sounds like from, if we were to put ourselves in Boaz's place, it sounds like he's excited about something, right? Whatever the Nara has said to him, whether aim to be negative, whether aim to be neutral or positive, there's something which is there's a bee in his bonnet. He's very excited, which is why he runs over. What do you think? Okay, so maybe that's exactly what it is. Is that maybe the over here is because he realizes she's family. That's what suddenly gets him interested. Now that can go two ways though, because what's interesting about the fact that she's family is most likely he knew about the return of Naomi and Rus, and he knew there was this family with a straggler, so to speak. And yet he did nothing about it. You know, so he is excited, but we have to sort of temper that with his silence up till now. But suddenly he's excited and he's expressing this excitement in benevolence, but he wasn't up till now. There's this tension in his relationship to her. And she most definitely is confused because she probably has no idea about the bigger picture going on over here, even though he may have an inkling of that. Of the great imagination.
Well, clearly also he uses the word bt, which is a daughter, which connotes family.
Right, so that's a very important word.
So that clearly then, meaning he's interested in her and clearly he watches her before he says anything to her. She must have done something to impress him, because then he decides that, okay, she's good and she's not a Moabia, but she's a bt.
Right, so one second. And, you know, he does say bt, but he doesn't say it yet.
No, he said.
One second, where is it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, you're right. He does. He actually says it in Pasuk Ches. Correct. Okay, this is going to be an important word because look how she responds. Look how she responds. This is very interesting. You know, like if you were to put yourself in Rus's shoes right now and you're in the field and the owner of the field comes up to you and says, you know, this very over-the-top, you know, sort of, you know, she's the lowest rung, or, you know, she's not a worker. She's a tzedakah collector. She doesn't even have a specific relationship with his field, you know, and now he's giving all this. What would you, you know, in your position, what would you do? You'd be somewhat maybe shy, you'd be scared, you'd be, you know, confused about what's going on. But listen to how she responds. There's an interesting emphasis that she places in Pasuk Yud. Her response is, So she prostrates herself in appreciation. Tomere love, madam why do I find favor in your eyes for you to distinguish or recognize me? That's important. Coming back to Sharon's point is, you know, she's being recognized. She's being isolated. There's something bigger going on. She can't understand it. And I'm foreign. Very interesting, meaning he starts off the conversation by saying, daughter, you know, like there's an implication of closeness, of something deeper. And she's backing off and she's emphasizing Nachriah. Why would she be doing that? Why is she emphasizing her strangeness, her foreignness at this point in time? Meaning this is the point where she should maybe embrace whatever the unknown or strange kindness that she's receiving, but she suddenly pulls out her, she places in between them her the differences between them. So Rav Bachrach says in this, what a beautiful, beautiful thought, is that's exactly the point. Is she saying, I don't understand it. You're telling me you're my daughter. You're telling me there's something between us. You're telling us that there's some responsibility you have to me. Well, I don't get it. Where were you up till now? Why is Naomi living in a shack at the side of town and nobody's knocking on the door and I'm collecting food so that she can survive and you're not here? Now suddenly you find me and suddenly everything's great. I am strange to you because of you. That's what she's saying. You can't, meaning don't walk in suddenly and now open the doors and say, well, you know, we're all connected. But where were you? There's a sense of there's a veiled attack or question mark that she's having. Yes, sorry.
People, human nature, usually if you're so unbelievably good to somebody, it's usually an underlying reason. In other words, before he wasn't, why didn't he, as you say? So now maybe he heard and maybe he has a personal interest in her. So maybe now he's deciding to befriend her.
That's her pushback. That's exactly his pushback. Pushback, and she's saying, well, why now? You know, I mean, to say, no, right. But that's her question. Is you should be consistent. So that's exactly her question to him, and so that's why he reaffirms it when he turns. Listen how he responds. He says, "Vayan Boaz, hugadli, kol asher asisis chamaseich achrei mosi sheich. I know what you did to for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband. Hazi avich v'imech v'eres moladateich. You left your house of your father and mother, your birthplace. Vatelchi am asher leyadat to Moshe Hashem. You went after a nation that you did not know previously. Yishalem Hashem poaleich. Yishalem Hashem poaleich. Hashem should repay your actions. Usehi maskurteich shleima, and your repayment should be full." Me'im Hashem Elokei Yisrael, from God of Israel, Asher Ba'os L'Chasos Tachas Kenafav, that you came to seek refuge under his wings. And that's going to be a very important pasuk as we consider the Megillah as a whole. But what he's saying is that you're deserving of whatever it is that I'm giving you, because now you're sort of taking that tack, which is that you ultimately do good. But there might be more than what he's saying, because that's not the direct response. She's saying, I'm foreign. So how's he responding to her comment? Yeah, how's he responding to her comment of saying that I am different?
He's saying that you're not different.
So he's saying you're not different. Why? Because you made the journey,
exactly.
Right? She can go the distance. So what she is going over here is almost as an echo back to. But more than that, these words are obviously reverberate throughout Tanakh. This is the Lech Lecha echo over here, which she's saying, is you left your father's house and your mother's house, your land of your birthplace, and you went to another nation. Lech Lecha, me'artzecha, me'meradzecha, me'beis avicha. That was Avraham Avinu's movement. What's he doing? What's he saying is he is affirming her journey. So she is saying, I'm different. She is saying, your difference is what we celebrate because of what you made, the journey that you made in order to get here. So what happens over here is he is celebrating the difference rather than emphasizing the difference, which is a very powerful tool over here. And therefore, if you were to ask Boaz at this point in time, and remember, this is public, you know, this is in the middle of his field. So people watching on the sides, and they were to ask Boaz, you know, so is she a Moabite or is she an Israelite? What's he saying?
Israelite.
She's saying Israelite, right? That's he is saying publicly, and this is not just, you know, in a private meeting where he's going to, you know, make her feel good, diplomatically. This is what he's saying over here is that I know that you are really, you've made that journey, you're not a Nachriya anymore. And I know the kindness you did, so I'm going to take that further. So again, once again, we've had a little bit interesting conversation over here. We have Ruth doing her business, Boaz noticing her, asking the Nair informing him information, it sounds like. He is picking up the information very excitedly, now taking her under his wing. She pushes back, and he says, no, you've made the journey, you're special. And so now, she once again responds, and notice how curt and short her answers are. She says, "Vatomer emtzachen beinecha adoni, I should find favor in your eyes. Kini chamtani, you have given me comfort. V'chi dibarta alev shivchasecha, you've spoken to the heart of your maidservant. V'nachilo yekachas shivchasecha, I should not be like one of your maidservants." She's really essentially downplaying all his kindness. You know, I'm not even one of your maidservants. Come close, eat from the bread. There's the bread production, you're just saying, Shelley. Right? You come from the bread that we produced. And dip your bread in the vinegar. Sit by the harvesters. Now remember, the harvesters are the employees, as opposed to just the collectors. She takes a little bit and she is satiated and leaves over, which means that let's say she was given a slice or two of bread. What does she do? She's only having a little bit. So even in her, like, you know, she's been given the royal table. Even in that, she's not thinking about, you know, the number one. She's thinking about Naomi, right? She's going to leave over the extra, you know. So she's not just going to have a fun day out in the city. She's going to come back and bring things back to Naomi, just a beautiful description of her selflessness. The Midrashim will pick up on a very interesting aspect of this pasuk, and that is that actually in Shmuel Beis, when David HaMelech is about to be made king, there's an interesting description where he says himself. You know, am I really so worthy of kingship, Hashem, that you've brought me up to this place? That you've brought me till here? So all the Midrashim pick up on this and say that that's what she's doing. She is now moving away. He is putting on her, he's ladening her with not just honor, but almost purpose. And he's saying, you know, there's something about you that needs to be addressed. And she's saying, why are you bringing me? He's saying, come here. And she keeps resisting that, not just honor, but also mission that he's putting in her direction. What mission ultimately is, she's going to be the great grandmother of David HaMelech, which is who's going to say the same words when asked about the same mission later on. What Boaz has essentially done is his words have converted themselves into actions. Now he's bringing her under his wing directly.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Do we have any indication that he knows this greater mission thing? Like, why are we thinking that?
So we're going to see it in a few ways. We're going to see it in a few ways as well. We're going to see it when it comes to the amount of grains that he gives her. We're going to see it when in the next Perek, in Perek Gimel, when he starts talking about, you know, when he starts talking about marriage. But it does sound like there's a bigger picture at hand, whether prophetically or not prophetically. That's the question. Meaning sometimes he'll say, Nibba v'lo yodam asher nibba. We don't know, he might have been saying prophetic things, we don't know if he really knew that. But in this particular instance, that's what the Mepharshim was saying, that in his Goshi Halom, he's saying the same words that will ultimately be said to her great-grandson, who's going to produce because of his Kirva. That really is the end of the day. He says, he puts into his institution the policy, nobody embarrass her. Don't allow her to collect between the different the collectors. Don't get angry with her. And she gathers everything she collected, and it's an ephah, which is a huge amount of grain. So that's her first interaction. That's her day with Boaz. Now let's just for a moment just zoom out for a moment about Boaz. So who is this Boaz? I mean, this is what we've seen, his interaction. He seems to live up to his words. He seems to be a benevolent person. He seems to be a person who is important in society, right? He owns fields, and he has also set the policy of where Hashem's name is used. So who is Boaz? So let's just remember. What stage of the game are we in right now? So in Shoftim, right? Because the Megillas Rus begins with Vayhi Bimei Shvot HaShoftim. It's the time of the judges being judged, or the day of the judges, whichever you want to translate it, which means that we should be able to pinpoint Boaz's life somewhere in the Shoftim. So if we're reading this right, and as the Megillah seems to suggest, Boaz sounds like he is an important person in society, so maybe, perhaps, he could have been a Shofet, but there's no Shofet who's called Boaz. Right, so go through all the Sefer Shoftim, you're not going to find any Shofet who's Boaz. So what do you do? So where does he live? When does he live? What was that?
Maybe one of them is Boaz, but with another name.
Okay, so maybe one of them is. Right, so there, it happens to be that one of the lesser known Shoftim might be our goal. There is a Shofet, I actually did not include this for this round, but there is a Shofet who lives between Yiftach and Shimshon. Okay, so we did a lot of time on Yiftach, we spent a lot of time on Shimshon as well. Now we're at a point where the Psukim tell us, it's an end of Perek, beginning of Perek Yud Beis in Shoftim, it says, Vayishpot acharav, after Yiftach, there was a judge, Ivtzan mi Beis Lechem. This person, Ivtzan, and he lived in Bethlehem. Okay, sounds familiar, so that's good. Vayhilo shloshim bonim shloshim bonois. He had 30 sons, 30 daughters. That's an incredible amount of children. Can you imagine the tuition?
How many wives?
Can you imagine? Can you imagine the bar mitzvahs? Yeah, and the machatanim, right? So 30 sons, 30 daughters. And he married off 30 daughters. And he married 30 girls into his house. And he was a shofet for 7 years. And he died and he was buried in Beis Lechem. So we know very little about him besides the fact that he had a tremendously blessed family. That's all we know about this Ivtzan. And the Gemara of Bava Basra says, the Ralbag quotes this Gemara of Bava Basra saying that we need to attribute who Boaz could possibly be. And we know he was in the day of Shoftim, and he seems to be of Shofet status. So it's most likely that Boaz, in fact, is Ivtzan, which is the conclusion the Gemara draws. That this Boaz is this person, Ivtzan, which we need to think in the back of our heads then is, so why does he have two names then? Meaning, make it simpler for us. Right? Why doesn't Tanakh just tell us that in fact he is Boaz in the end of the day? So that's a question which should be in the back of our minds. So the Gemara of Bava Basra goes on to say something else, which is quite remarkable. And that is a very interesting thing. The Gemara of Bava Basra says that that in fact, if you look at this contextually, if he is immediately before Shimshon, what is the first part of the story of Shimshon? What's the first as a part of the story of Shimshon? Because the story is a whole chapter dedicated to the Manoach and Ashes Manoach and the angel, and the parents cannot have children, and then this angel approaches Manoach and they have children. That's the immediate following story to this whole episode over here. So Gemara Bava Basra says that this Ivtzan person was very rich as well, and he would throw great feasts for these weddings. He would make 120 feasts for his children. So he obviously celebrated his children greatly, but which is based on the children that he had and how many weddings they were having and how many wedding parties. However, it says the Gemara says the following words. This is the Gemara of Bava Basra. It says, "V'chol achas achas asa shtei mishtais." For each child, he made two feasts: echad beveis aviv, v'achad beveis chamiv. One in his home, one in the in-laws' home. V'kulon loy zimen es manoach. And in every feast, he never invited Manoach, who is the subject of the next chapter. What Omar Kudna or Pirda Akara Bamai Par Ali. He says, look, he's a mule. What's a mule? What's unique about a mule?
Sterile.
They're sterile. Meaning, Manoach doesn't have children. You know, you know, if I'm going to be spending, you know, it's expensive to invite people to weddings, right? Think about the catering in the times in Bethlehem in those days. It was probably a monopoly. And, you know, you invite somebody to your wedding. He's not going to invite me to his kids' weddings. You know, how's he going to pay me back? He doesn't have any kids. So Manoach was inconspicuously left off the invitation list. Right? So it says, Kulon Mesu Bechayov, says the Gemara, that all his children die. Now, whether this is literal or whether this is a hyperbole, not clear. But nonetheless, the Gemara makes a very, very heavy comment about this person called Ivtsan, and that he it sounds like he was a very generous person, sounds like he was a very benevolent person, but the fact that he might have ignored the peripheries of society, people who may not be as centerpiece because of their status, was something which was somewhat his undoing. And if that's true, then I think it sheds a whole new light on Boaz as a whole then. You know, if we think back to what's going on over here, is in fact, one day on the Gemara says that it may have been that it was the wedding feast of one of his children was what people congregating outside of town for when they saw Naomi. Okay, so if that's true, that's one approach in the Gemara. That means to say that, think about that. So here he is, you know, he is walking out of the feast of a child where everybody's invited because it's the whole town. And then there's Naomi, who's this side character, and he sort of silently leaves her to be. In the same way, almost, that Manoach is left to be. You know, meaning, you know, there's not going to be a quid pro quo over here. And maybe part of the journey of Boaz is the journey in which he's having over here in the field, where he re-accesses Rus, and he rethinks, and something attracts him in mission, at least, maybe more deeply or maybe more directly, is that he's awoken up. Maybe the journey of the Megillah isn't just the journey of Rus, maybe the journey of the Megillah is Boaz recalibrating his scale of people who are important in his life and who he helps. That might be another aspect of what's going on over here. Which just adds a little bit of a twist into the theme over here. More than that, in fact, another option the Gemara suggests is that where was everybody congregating around when Rus and Naomi entered town? So the Gemara suggests another option, and that is that it was the death of Boaz's wife. So they were all at the funeral of Boaz's wife, which is so interesting because what that means is that after all the tragedy in his family, and it's almost like his entire nuclear family is disappearing. Isn't that interesting? Because we have another set of characters whose nuclear family has disappeared, and that is Naomi and Rus. They're sort of these isolated individuals, and they enter town as he is completely bereft of his family. And so what happens over here is maybe the growing pain that Boaz has to experience is going to be parallel to that pain that is being experienced of Rus and Naomi as they're integrating into society, which is maybe when he turns and he says, Lami Hanara Hazos, it's the first awakening of thinking beyond just the group of people who he is used to. And that's a very significant question now, which becomes his journey in further into appreciating who Rus could possibly be.
Why does it say, Mi Hanara Hazos, but then also he said he knew who she was?
Oh, so it sounds like once the Na'ara tells him, that's when he realizes. He notices something unique, because as we discussed, it could be that, you know, it was the dress or the way she's conducting herself, or was she married, and all those questions which may be triggering his interest. But when he finds out that the Na'ara Mavia who came with Naomi, then everything clicks in together, and suddenly, but the fact that he's even interested in the first place is already the step in the direction of perhaps his tikkun, of his journey over here. The reason why this is just so important is that sometimes we look at the Megillah as the Megillas Rus, and that is Megillas Rus, and Rus is really one of the most transformational characters. But I think it's important not to look at Boaz as a linear character. Let's not think of him as a constant. Let's look at Boaz himself as a growing character with his own struggles, his own cultural backgrounds, and coming and perhaps in a parallel journey towards Ruth as well, is making that journey. So what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to look at him from that perspective, because here's the last thing, and we'll leave off with this, is that when Boaz is suddenly excited and suddenly realizes and he shows benevolence to Ruth, you know, in the end of the day, who does he say should help Ruth? He opens up his field, but who does he say should be there to help Ruth? He makes he tells them to make it easier for her. But at the end of the day, he says, you know, you did such a wonderful act of kindness. Hashem should pay you back. Hashem, you came to rest under his wing. Meaning, what's he essentially saying? He's realizing, he's recognizing her plight. But he's still leaving it, at this point in the time, he still leaves her plight in God's hands. Okay, so even as active as he is, it's still reactive. It's still, meaning he's going to facilitate and he's going to make it easy. But at this point in time, we don't see him rectifying the situation. We don't see him working out, wait a second, is there a family? Is there a field? Is there a suitor? Is there something that can be done? What he does is he says, we'll make it easy, and Hashem should help you with the rest of it, and goodbye and good luck. And so at this point in time, Boaz has made his first step, as we've seen in Perek Beis. What we're going to see is the following steps that Boaz is going to make as he finally becomes the active partner in this resolution over here, which is going to be his redemption at the same time as Naomi and Ruth's redemption.